There were giants in the earth in those days. And when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children, the same became mighty men, which were of old men of renown.
Catapult the propaganda. The truth is out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
Funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
From a two-bedroom craftsman-style bunker somewhere on the 39th parallel, welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. We don't know where we are. That's why we say somewhere
that's
on the 39th
right.
parallel. We don't have a GPS system, so we have no idea.
It's a transdimensional thing, and that's perfect timing because we're going to talk with a guy who's done a lot of research into that tonight, a fellow who just, well, he's been making the rounds of all the media outlets and up to and including, of course, the granddaddy of them all, Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to our friend Tom Horn. Tom, welcome.
Hey, well, thanks, Derek and Sharon, for having me back on your show again. And are you happy to be back in this very familiar venue again?
Yeah, well, we've been happy to, you know, we've been doing the show, and about 6 months ago, I guess, we had some scheduling issues as we were determining where mm-hmm. we were going to relocate
yeah,
the bunker.
Is that what you meant? Or back in Indiana?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. You move from one state to the other and getting relocated, and I wasn't sure if that meant during that transitional time if you had any vacant spaces during the PID empire.
Well, we were personally vacant there for a while, but
yeah,
I think
yeah.
we were still talking. Our lips were flapping, and we were saying things, but I have no idea if they were coherent.
Well, it.
I can tell you because I know from Raiders News Network that. Your program and the stuff that you guys write and your news service, you know, that you have a very, very strong, large, devout following, and people get really nervous if there's any missing time when they're not getting their Derek and Sharon time. So
that's very kind of you to say that. It's funny you should say missing time, though, because time is something we want to talk to you about.
Yeah.
And, you know, things that appear to move in ways that defy the laws of time and gravity and physics as we know them and so forth. Of course, your most recent book, Nephilim Stargates, the Year 2012 and the Return of the Watchers, gets right to the heart of what we do on PID Radio. And that's why we wanted to have you back, especially as we get into a year in which things are just happening that are beyond weird. I mean, of course, we've got some of the terrible natural catastrophes that have taken place, the cyclone in Myanmar, the earthquake in China, but then
tornado in Denver today.
Tornado in Denver today.
Well,
you know, 5,000 feet.
But...
Yeah, which defies known logic, and those the earthquakes
cluster
that continue.
Earthquakes in
Nevada.
And there was an earthquake in Illinois, mm-hmm. actually several of them, and China is still ringing like a bell. Tom, what's going on out there?
Well, you know, and I still have friends on the West Coast. I got out of there while the getting was good, but I still have friends over there. You know, and I had a call the other day. They were talking about a tornado in Washington State, and then one touchdown just for a few minutes near Portland, Oregon. This is stuff, you know, we've never heard of this before. So we're living in it's an accelerated time. Things are changing. Prophecy seems to be unfolding around the world in such a dramatic and high speed fashion that it's difficult for those of us that try to do reporting in this area and write books. I've got a book right now that I'm up to about almost 3,000 pages of research material, and I can't seem to even get the time to actually start writing the text. It's just amazing, you know, what's happening around the world. And I know that we want to talk about Stargates tonight and mm-hmm. and that we only have less than an hour of recording time, so I'll try to get right to the subject and stay on task with you.
I want to ask you a question really quickly, though, Tom, before we get to that. And, you know, we're talking about the catastrophes, what Jesus told us, that the birth pangs, we get closer and closer. I have a question. What is your opinion on this? Regarding what Jesus said, when in the book of Revelation and Daniel, all the prophetic material, and we see them coming to life, the weather and all of that, do you think that the Lord is causing those things, or is it simply that the Lord knew in advance what mankind was going to try to do?
Well, I think it's both, and I'm not trying to skirt the issue. There are obviously times in biblical history where God used the environment as a form of chastisement. At least he did that in Israel's history when he wanted to, you know, he'd use plagues. You look at the Exodus, and it's obvious that God can master the plagues. He can send things that cause people to do what he wants them to do or compels them to do at a given situation. I also think, though, that it's not wise to ascribe everything that occurs as to being the hand of God. The danger of that causes the world sometimes, I think, to be critical of Christianity when we say, you know, we're going to stand up and pray and we're going to pray this storm away and it's not going to come onto our, but then all of a sudden it does come on land and it kills a lot of people, and it just raises more questions than it does answers. And so, you know, God put us in a world where there is a natural environment. There's an ecosystem. There's things that are occurring within our world that can affect the planet, that can affect the storm seasons. You get more. I saw a news story today where they're expecting 9 hurricanes this season. Last year, though, it set a record, didn't it? Something like 23 or 24 hurricanes during the hurricane season. I would not want to believe that each and every time something happens, and, you know, we call it an act of God, but I would not want to think that lightning strikes a tree and it falls on my house tonight, that I got to go out there and clean it up and say, okay, well, what are you trying to teach me here, God? I mean, I just think that, you know, we're living in a world in which some things can occur, but God is not related to time in the same way that we are. We're moving through time like a leaf floating down a stream. It's all fluid. There's a beginning and an ending. But when you look at what the old prophets told us about God, God is something entirely different. Einstein, I think, had his finger more on the pulse of what God is in terms of his relationship to time, in that he is the Alpha and the Omega. He's the beginning and the ending. As hard as it is for our mind to imagine, God is still existing in time as far back as it has ever been and as far forward into the future as it shall ever be. I am that I am. He's not related to time in the same way that we are. And therefore, it makes it very easy for God to be able to take John from the island of Patmos and show him the future, literally take him there and let him watch it unfold before him, and then put him back on the Isle of Patmos, and John can record the things that occur in the last days and record them accurately, exactly as he saw them unfolding. He can tell us exactly how they are going to occur. The reason that I think, Sharon, to just sum this up, the reason that I think it's important to understand God in that way is because otherwise you have a problem perhaps with predestination, with Calvinism, with the idea that, you know, I might as well do anything I want to do today because I don't really have anything to do with it. God has already predetermined where I'm going to be and what I'm going to do and so on. Where Paul, when he was writing to the Ephesians, who believed that they had been predestined to be worshipers of the great goddess Diana, he wanted to defeat the idea of that kind of predestination, and he referred to God, saying, whom he did foreknow, them he did also predestinate. So there's a difference between foreknowledge and predestination. Foreknowledge means God is as far forward into my future as I shall ever exist. And he knows what decisions I'm going to make by my free moral will. So he knows, by foreknowledge, I've chosen to serve him. Therefore, I'm also predestinated, which is entirely different than saying I didn't have anything to do with the decision-making process. So I didn't mean to get off on a tangent, but I think that when you open this, when you open this concept that God is controlling every little tiny thing, every stone that's falling off the side of the hill during an earthquake and rolling down into a mud puddle, it can become something that leads to other concepts in theology that then lead to things like predestination and error, I think. So I think it's both. Did I skirt the issue?
No, not at all. You answered my question. And if I could just have a follow-up. And I think this is going to lead us where we need to go. The reason I ask that question is I personally believe that there are experiments going on in the world by humans, most likely humans working with supernatural agents, and that these experiments are having consequences that we are seeing in the effect of tornadoes and earthquakes and hurricanes. And I'm talking about weather manipulation and things like that, but also literally the opening of gates.
Right. Well, Sharon, I agree with you. I agree with you. I mean, I believe that too. By the way, I have an insider at Monsanto. Something that I've never admitted before, but one of the people who is capable of giving me information actually works inside Monsanto and works at the level where he is experimenting with the development of new technology and seeds and things like that. Excuse me. And he told me this about 2 weeks ago via email. He said, you know, you keep barking up the Monsanto tree, and he likes me, but he said, the real big issues in all this are not happening at Monsanto. He said, if you want to know where the really spooky stuff is happening, it's happening outside of the United States in places like Latin America, where our military is involved with other people there, and they're doing. In fact, his direct reference had to do with a story that I had run, and I had connected it to the genetic modification of humans and animals, and I had predicted, and it didn't take I don't think it took a prophet to do this, but I had predicted that the United Kingdom was going to approve this embryology bill allowing for the creation of human-animal chimeras, but his email to me was saying, if you want to know where the really scary stuff is happening, these human-animal chimeras, I mean, they're doing this kind of research full scale, at full mature level, adult specimens, if you will. And this is a guy who would know, and he's never lied to me about anything. And it really took me back, because, of course, I was, speculating about some of this stuff through the Armand Gate, and also, another person had told me that some of this stuff was actually occurring, but you have to be really careful when you always use unnamed sources, because you become not credible.
Mm-hmm.
For this guy to tell me this, though, it said, there's all around the world, whether it's weather modification, the things that we're seeing right now, that what we're seeing is 20 years behind what is actually occurring. If you saw that movie, was it called The Core?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I think it was, just that we're messing with stuff right now that could affect our environment or the earth, the balance of nature, in ways that are unprecedented, and that could unleash some of these biblical plagues or whatever at an unprecedented scale. Things could begin occurring. Things may already be set in motion right now that can't be stopped.
And we're talking about something a little more substantial than just the emissions coming from our SUV.
That's right.
Now,
think of the ancient story. This is an astonishing thing. Anybody listening to this show can realize that there are structures and other kinds of evidence around the world that seem to indicate that at one time there was vast knowledge among the citizens of Earth. They built incredible structures. They penned the detailed movements of the stars. The Mayans, how in the world would they know that the end of their 26,000 year calendar would bring us to solar maximus and other things? How in the world could they do such detailed things that we only, in the 16th, 17th century were coming around to understanding? But if you look at history, there's all this evidence that there was great knowledge on the earth, and then all of a sudden, everything is gone. Everything is dead. And then the Sumerian civilization comes along, and there's, I don't know if it's a recreation or whatever it is, but mankind starts repopulating the earth or populating the earth, and Abraham comes out of the city of Ur a Sumerian city, and the Bible is being written, the Old Testament's being written, and all these other texts. But there's these ancient edifices that are all over the earth that seem to tell us that there was a world, something happened, and then it started over again. And when you go to, and we've talked about this on your show and on your other show too, we've talked about this on different occasions that the testament that is there, the record that is there around the world, speaks to us of a time when these gods began tinkering with the balance of nature, blending humans and animals and doing other things that then led to chaos and to great destruction. And even the chimera, which, you know, modern news reporters now keep referring to these human animals as chimeras, the chimera was a testament. It was a beast that foreshadowed disaster. So there's this testament that is there. It's like the ancients left behind a record that says, don't do this because it's going to lead to great destruction. And yet here we are, these 6,000 or 7,000 years later, 8,000 years later, whatever it is, and it seems like we are going right back into the same sciences that led to the same kind of catastrophic circumstances once before in Earth's history. And you know that old saying, those who fail to learn from the past are damned to repeat it.
Yes. Yep. Now, the title of your most recent book, Nephilim Stargates, Return of the Watchers, the year 2012 and Return of the Watchers, where do the Watchers fit into all this? Some foundational information for people who may be new to the concept. Where do they fit into the cosmology?
Well, there were a couple of things that actually started me down the trail, you know, to writing that book, Nephilim Stargates. And I should say right off the bat that when I use the term stargates in my last two books, I'm using the term somewhat loosely to describe a larger idea of portals or gateways or pathways or doorways, some method through which it might be possible for unknown intelligence, whether you call them extraterrestrials, like, you know, the Vatican's back in the news this week saying that there are space brothers, and if we discover them, don't worry about it. They're, you know, they might even be close. The astonishing thing is they're saying they might actually be closer to God than we are. They haven't fallen. We did. They're actually more in line than we are. But in any case, ultra-terrestrials, or call them angels and demons, whatever. The idea that there is intelligence and that it's not readily available to our eyesight or to our senses, but that it is there, and that there could be a method by which this intelligence can move from its plane of existence into ours, either from very far distances away or from other dimensions that are all around us, and they move from that dimension into ours. Now, obviously the idea of stargates means different things to different people. There are those who are among quantum physicists right now who see the possibility of stargates or wormholes, but they look at it as advanced but natural, not supernatural, mm-hmm. advanced but natural science. And I always tell people, you know, I'm a researcher, not a scientist, and so my ability to dialogue about the possibility of things like quantum physics or even Einsteinian physics is something that's really limited. But when it comes to wormhole stargates from a scientific point of view, it's my understanding, Derek and Sharon, and I know you guys are probably further along in understanding this than I am, that there have been very recent improvements in our knowledge of general relativity, mm-hmm. and that it has caused some of these physicists, these scientists, to believe, at least theoretically, that, for want of a better term, stargate manipulators could be appearing or disappearing through traversable wormholes, Star Trek, essentially, technology. And for those that might not understand that, Alan Holt, you know, back in the 70s, he defined a field of science called the field reconnaissance space-time tunneling. Today is what we call wormholes or stargates. And it's the idea that hyperspace tunnels could connect either remote regions of the universe or different dimensions or maybe even different moments in time. And that goes back to the conversation we've been having earlier, so that UFOs, for instance, since that's what was mentioned, could hypothetically travel through these space-time tunnels from incredibly far distances to the Earth in matters of seconds, or maybe even faster than that, maybe faster than the speed of light. Now, in my book, I actually make some quotations. If anybody wants to read Nephilim Stargates, I make some quotations in there from some physicists who talk about how these craft that are seen during, like, UFO encounters might be exploiting wormholes in order to intersect with our local space and to interact with us. And the intelligence that's controlling wormhole technology might be using them also as a window to peer into and to probe into our world, sometimes without even having to send craft through. And there's a lot of what happens in UFO sightings. You know, they say right now that we're in the largest UFO flap in history. And that by itself also could be prophetic. On the one hand, they're saying that, you know, that UFO sightings and things like that is kind of a dead issue. A lot of people are kind of tired of talking about it, whatever. And yet the people, the most sincere investigators into this field say, yes, but, you know, we may be getting tired of hearing about it, but there's more of it happening right now than has ever happened in history before. So there is this scientific side that could be explained through quantum physics. But as you know, stargates, from my point of view, and this is probably more what I write about since I'm not a scientist, it could mean something entirely different. Something else could be happening, or something that at least is in addition to the physics of wormholes or stargates. And that goes to your point, Derek. Something maybe of a metaphysical phenomenon is occurring here. You know, I don't know if you ever read any of the books by Dr. John Mack.
No, I'm afraid I haven't.
Well, I had to because, you know, I had to do this for research. But he wrote a book called Abduction, Human Encounters with Aliens. You know, Mack was a physician. He was also a PhD. He was actually fairly, really well respected until he decided that he wanted to do clinical studies in the so-called alien abduction phenomenon, which unfortunately, you know, kind of cost him some of his friendship with some of the academics in certain institutions, and I guess created probably other friendships for him. But he approached this because he wanted to know what was going on, and according to his own writings, in the beginning he was very skeptical, but then he came to believe that something really was happening. He actually interviewed, as a clinical psychologist, I mean, he interviewed thousands of people, literally, this is not an overstatement, thousands of people who had claimed alien abduction. And here was one of the extraordinary things, though, that he found was that many of these abductees, when they would begin making their descriptions to him, and by the way, the people he was interviewing, some of them were low education, but many of them were not. Because of who he was, he had people that were also other academics. He had people who had degrees in science, medical doctors. It was astonishing the number of people that actually came to him and allowed him to use different names so that they wouldn't be identified, but to tell him their stories. And he talked about how they had spoke to him of their sense, and this takes us to Stargate, that at least some of the experiences were not occurring within the physical space-time dimensions of the universe as we comprehend it. He talked about how they spoke of aliens breaking through from another dimension. He actually said through a slit or a crack in some sort of barrier, a gateway, a portal, and that they would enter our world from what he called beyond the veil. And the other side of this story is he also talked about some of these abductees who had little education to prepare them to explain about such abstractions or odd, you know, dislocations as wormholes, whatever. But how they would draw diagrams and talk to him. These are people with very low education, but they would describe things that could only be explained in terms of quantum physics or space-time occurring around them. I mean, and yet their experiences, he said, were more real to them in many cases than even the familiar physical world in which we live. So it's incredible that this whole record from the beginning of time until now, and including all of the ancient books and sacred books, including the Bible, describe encounters between people and other dimensionals. Now, in the Bible, and if you're, you know, if you're a very traditional Christian, you're talking about angels and demons. But there are many other people that study this phenomenon, and they use other terms. It really doesn't matter. We're saying that there is an intelligence. And in many cases, this intelligence seems to behave in a way that is malevolent. And that it, but that under some circumstances, it can move from its plane of existence into our plane of existence and interact with us. Usually when it's invited, sometimes when it's not invited. As far, you know, and I think you and I have talked before, you know, 1918, Aleister Crowley trying to create a dimensional vortex and bridge the gap between the world of the seen and the unseen, and he does the Amalantra working and brings through Lamb and describes him as looking like an alien gray.
It was before anyone knew what a gray looked like, exactly. Before it had been popularized in movies, yeah.
Well, and when they started being described, you know, today people can go on the Internet, and it really is the information highway. And you can find what alien grays look like or even what Lamb looks like. But back when this was 100 years ago, I mean, back when he'd made this drawing, you know, 50, 60 years ago, when people first started talking about abduction, especially 40 or 50 years ago, and making their drawings and depictions, I would venture to say the very few people in the world had ever seen his drawing of Lamb.
I bet you're right.
You know, and so, and then, of course, you know, a couple decades later or three decades later, whatever it was, rocket scientists and the co-founder of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory talk about the connection between the occult and our science laboratories and what they might be doing in science now. I mean, you had Jack Parsons and then his pal Ron Hubbard from the Church of Scientology. they followed up with the Babylon working, another attempt to try to reopen this gateway they believe had been created by Crowley. And I don't want to get into a big, long description about Crowley and these guys, but the point is, when you make an intentional effort, all of them said, recorded, that they, to some extent, were successful in their attempt in opening a gateway, a pathway, through which something came. In fact, Parsons wrote that his ritual was successful to the point that he had a brownish yellow light that came through the doorway, and at one moment he was actually struck by something invisible and the candle was knocked out of his hand. And it's also interesting that following Crowley's magic portal, which he claimed produced the alien-looking lamb, and then Hubbard and Parsons' Babylon working, Crowley died in 1947. Isn't that extraordinary? The same year as the Roswell crash, and the same year that Kenneth Arnold saw his flying saucers and sightings of aliens started increasing all around the world, and it makes you wonder if maybe either they were successful, something had occurred, or it was simply historic that they were there in the first place. And if you go and you study the adepts of Enochian magic and Ordo Templo, Templi Orientis, or whatever it's called, that Crowley had started, they believed that these guys were successful, that they opened a pathway, that a portal, something. And now, of course, my background, where I get interested in this, is because Christian theologians also believe that there are intelligences, and that under extraordinary or specific circumstances, these beings can come through from their reality to ours and interact with us. And in my book, Nephilim Stargates, you mentioned, you know, I talk about how that in the Bible, these beings, intelligences, they are recorded as inhabiting the air, the earth, the sea, and also the atmosphere, the heavens, and even the deep heavens, deep space. For instance, the physical earth contains living spiritual forces. The Book of Revelation talks about the four angels that are bound in the great river Euphrates. Job talks about dead things that form from under the waters, and that word dead is Rapha, Rephaim, the offspring of the watchers and the Nephilim. If 2 Peter and Jude in the New Testament actually describe the earth as kind of a holding tank, if you will, a prison, where God has bound these fallen entities, but that these fallen spirits might seek to communicate with or participate in, somehow involve themselves with humans, is something that's also defined in the scriptures. Deuteronomy 18, almost the whole chapter is dedicated to warning the Hebrews that these spirits might try to do that. And then when you look at the example of the witch of Endor, so-called, or the maiden of the Ob, when she communicated with these spirits, the aftermath was, it says in 1 Samuel 28, it says, they ascended up from out of the earth, or that's her description. They were ascending up from out of the earth as gods. So, and then, of course, other cultures, the Sumerians, Hittites, the Babylonians, the Assyrians, even the ancient Chinese, believed that gateways on Earth, this is a very interesting study, that doors, for instance, the door to your house, the window to your house, gates to a city. The Assyrians were so spooked about all this stuff that they actually believed that these gateways on Earth were kind of symbolic of celestial or other reality, openings, which could be closed or open, through which dark and light influences could make entry. And so it was so important to the Assyrians to use imitative magic for protecting against undesirable influences, entities, mm-hmm. in their homes and their cities. So if you look at Assyrian architecture now, you notice these enormous transgenic beings guarding both sides of the entries, ways, the gates to a major city. And they would build these elaborate constructions and ceremonies that would be blessed by the names of their gods and by the names of good omens. They would even bury magic. I'm trying to think of the name of these things. I want to call them Eusebi, and I'm not sure if that's the right term. They would bury these little goddesses and gods underneath the area you would have to walk over to come through the gateway, and they would do that because their hope was to be able to protect against unwanted influences that would come into the city through that opening. They did the same thing, by the way, and you can see this in Catholicism today. They did the same thing with their windows and the door entries at their homes, where they would put things in the windows and in the doors to keep unwanted things. And, you know, today people still follow some of these practices around the world, burning candles and various things, the idea being that you want to guard the openings into your home, and you want to guard the openings maybe even into your mind. Derek and Sharon, here's the thing that is fascinating about this study. When you talk about stargates or wormholes, openings or pathways through which something else can come, this happens on different levels. We started out talking about wormholes. This is more of a kind of a quantum physics scientific approach to the idea that something could be created through which something else could travel at fast speeds or whatever. But then there's also this metaphysical idea that Crowley was trying to do and that others have tried to do, where they bridge the gap between the supernatural and the natural. But then there's also something else, and that's the mental or the psychological, the fact that you can open your mind through which...
Well, pharmakia.
Exactly right.
It's been known for years that, you know, shaman in various religions have used various
mescaline
substances,
and
mushrooms and whatnot, to open one's mind to the influence of other dimensions.
And the thing is, Is it just a hallucination? You know, there are people right now doing UFO research in which they're using different kinds of drugs, and they're reporting these extraordinary encounters. Well, you know, some people would say, oh, well, sure, you know, they got lit, or they got high, or they used a psychedelic drug, they used LSD. Remember Timothy Leary? And you know, but nothing there was reality. And yet in the Bible, the sources you were talking about just a moment ago, pharmakeia, that very reference had to do with the practicing of communicating with the dead and other unseen spirits through the use of drugs and things that could actually cause your aspects of your mind, closed off areas of your mind, that could be opened up to other realities that are there, but that in our current estate, without the use, I guess, of things like pharmakeia, you wouldn't be able to perceive into those realities. You know, years ago, how much time do we have?
About 20 minutes.
Yeah.
20 minutes?
Yes.
Years ago, I as a young preacher in Oregon, this is a long time ago. I mean, think prehistoric.
You know, I was there.
But here I am, you know, and I'm a young guy. I was attending, and this was the best church ever, Christian Center in Oregon, pastored at that time by Dr. Bob Cornwell, who's he started KCIS, which is still, you know, probably the biggest Christian radio station in that area now. He started ICTHUS, which became a Bible college. I mean, he was just an extraordinary guy. But Dr. Cornwall had a photographic memory, a literal photographic memory. And to pay his way through Bible college as a young man, he got a job proofreading books. And proofreading books for, I don't know, I forget the name of the company, but they produced scholarly works, kind of like Logos or something. And he retained 80% of everything he ever read.
Wow.
Well, then, you know, years later, by the time he was the pastor of this church, and he was probably, I don't know, maybe 50 at the time, he was literally a walking encyclopedia, and he started a radio show called Christian Question. And anybody could call in and ask him any question, and he would answer it. It was just the most fascinating thing, you know. But I never forget listening to him one day talking about, and this was in his, actually, he came up to Northern California and was giving a 7-day series of lectures there, and I went to it. But he was talking about original Adam. And how that in the Hebrew text there was this depiction of the original man as being able to see as God sees and to speak as God speaks. The implication from all of it being that man could see and speak into whatever dimensions exist, including the so-called spirit or angelic realm. Now, we know that Adam and Eve could see God. They walked with him openly. That's the story in Genesis. They could also see Lucifer. And they saw him in the garden in the form of the serpent, according to that story, and they spoke with him. But we also see how, after the fall, man's ability to see either God or the spirit realm or whatever was lost behind some kind of dimensional veil. Unless those beings who exist there choose to reveal themselves to us in some form. So, as I said earlier, you know, even quantum physics is suggesting that there is this possibility of parallel realities, multiple dimensions, that are beyond the casual grasp of us now, three-dimensional humans, or at least humans as we exist in this current body of flesh. But the whole thing about his Dr. Cornwell commentary and where we are today, I can't hardly talk. The Bible is one of the ancient books, and to me it is the authoritative text that contains reference to these other dimensional beings who exist around us in the spirit realm. They're called in the Hebrew the Elohim, Yahweh, his son, the angels, demons, even the spirits of dead humans are universally referred to throughout the Bible using this kind of language. And even though after the sons of Adam could no longer casually see into those realities, it never meant that they were not there, and that under some circumstances they could interact with our reality. For instance, you have Peter, James, and John. They follow Jesus to the Mountain of Transfiguration. And Moses and Elijah materialize. You have a spookier example of this in the Old Testament is the one from 1 Samuel, which I mentioned earlier, where Saul goes to this woman in Endor, and he has her make contact with the spirit of Samuel. I'll tell you something that separates me from some. I consider myself conservative, but I think this comment will separate me from other conservatives. You've heard people say that this wasn't really the spirit of Samuel, but that it was a pretending spirit, a familiar spirit, a so-called familiar spirit. And I understand, because of my Orthodox upbringing, I understand why people will say that, because if you say it really was the spirit of Samuel, now we're talking about, you know, ghosts communicating with the dead, the possibility of sin, the possibility that in reality you could have an ancestral spirit that could visit your home or something. And at least modern conservative Christians are really uncomfortable with that idea. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I've never thought that this is good theological interpretation. And also that you have to be really careful making the Bible fit with your doctrine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think it's pretty clear that it's actually Samuel. She's really terrified. She didn't expect the real Samuel to show up.
Well, what the Bible says here, and I guess that's, you know, the easiest way to always deal with this kind of stuff.
Just go and read it.
Yep.
It's just say, what does it say? And the fact is, the scripture here certifies over and over again that it was Samuel, mm-hmm. by repeatedly saying, and Samuel said.
Right.
And Samuel said over and over again. It never says, and there was this spirit pretending to be Samuel that said.
Exactly.
It says, and Samuel said, so you have to be really careful not to make, you know, not to misuse the scripture or make the scripture the lie and you the truth through your doctrine. But even then, it doesn't really matter. Even if a person, I mean, it matters, but in the context of what we're talking about, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't buy that this was actually the spirit of Samuel, the narrative makes the case under either point of view that intrusion into our plane of existence by other dimensional beings is possible, mm-hmm. especially where we're looking for them, or we're inviting them, or we're seeking them out. And this takes us back to what scientists and biotechnology and even what Dr. Cornwall believed, that such things as research, for instance, into the mind or the brain, and the use of pharmakeia in the Bible, that there might be a method of opening a portal in the mind. We refer to extrasensory perception. We talk about people who seem to be able to see, and you know, the truth is, some of these people who we say have ESP or whatever, you know, we avoid them like the plague. But some of them claim to be devout Christians, mm-hmm. who were born with a gift. They have a level of perception, and often they won't even admit it because it simply doesn't fit with what we need for them to say and do and whatever, to for us to accept their Christianity as being legal. but now, this rash of stories lately, where on the one hand you have UFO researchers and they're using psychedelic drugs to get in contact with extraterrestrial entities. And my question about this has been, okay, are they just having hallucinations, or is this something dating back to what Dr. Cornwall was talking about? A person opening a part of the mind that was sealed off at some point in the past, or ceased to function at some point in the past. something allowing them now to see into the spirit or other dimensional world. And it, and as Sharon said, is this why, you know, the book of Revelation, I think it's chapter 21, condemns sorcery using the word pharmakeia, or a person who uses drugs or potions or spells or enchantments in order to interact with the spirit world. Well, that's one example, by the way, of how the Bible itself would agree with some of these researchers that doorways could be opened in terms of levels of perception. And because I know we're not going to have time tonight to talk about transhumanism and Nick Bostrom and all those people hoping that we can integrate ourselves with animals in order to open some of these levels of perception, you know, I'll just say you probably, you guys report the news, so I'm sure you saw these experiments. I don't know if this was a month ago or two months ago. And this actually had been done some years ago, but they're re-reporting it a month ago, about tinkering with the atmosphere, like Sharon mentioned a minute ago, and acoustics, and how that some of this has, under some circumstances, created ghost-like materializations. First of all, tinkering with the atmosphere. You remember, maybe one of you can tell me, was this maybe 1 year ago, something like that, where DARPA had decided to hire HARP to create a radiation belt remediation system? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do vaguely. It seems like it was a little more than a year ago. I'm thinking a couple of years ago.
Okay, a couple of years. And the thing was, what they had envisioned to do was they saw this as a way of protecting low Earth orbiting satellites from damage. It might be either caused by severe solar storms or even from high altitude nuclear detonations. And then you remember, I forget it because I'm not a scientist here again, I'm not exactly sure what the problem was, but even the people that use ham radios and stuff were having a fit about this and talking about, you know, flushing all these particles from the radiation belts and dumping them back into the upper atmosphere may not be a good idea, you know. But how it could cause unprecedented changes to the atmosphere. But then you go from tinkering with the atmosphere to thinking about whom the Bible, I mean, tinkering with frequencies and atmosphere. Who is it that the Bible and other holy books describe as the God of the air or the God of the atmosphere?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's Beelzebub. It's, you know, the Lord of those that flit in the air, the prince of the power of the air, Satan. And then tinkering with sound and weaponizing acoustics. I actually read some years ago when Vic Tandy was experimenting with infrasound frequency, sound below the range of human hearing. And he wrote what the name of it was, and it might have even been called Ghosts in the Machine. But he wrote a report on his findings, on his scientific research. And the startling part about this report, and it was actually published in some science magazine, some peer-reviewed science magazine. But the startling thing about it was he actually described what sounded like rays or ghosts that actually came out of the darkness after him. It scared the jeebies out of him. And his thesis was, if I'm not wrong, it was published in a journal called the Society for Psychical Research, I think. But anyway, it was a peer-reviewed magazine. And here's this guy. I mean, he's a scientist. He's a skeptic. He believed all of this was just in his head, that it was just a trick of frequencies and eyeball resonations, him using sound waves below the sound of hearing. And he was able to create ghosts and stuff coming out of the chambers after him. But when I read it, I thought, perhaps he just didn't even understand the door that he was opening.
Have you seen the movie White Noise?
I don't think so.
Well, white noise is all about that, that there are sound frequencies and visual frequencies that we don't perceive consciously, but that are there all the time, and they literally allow, they open a door and they allow these things through.
Well, you know, that I remember that that was my impression when I read Vic Tandy's, I think, I'm pretty sure it's called Ghosts in the Machine, if somebody wants to look it up. And it's completely a scientific description of his research and his work on below hearing sound frequencies and how he was actually able to not only create but to repeat experiments in which this he could do these experiments and cause these things to literally come after him. One of the descriptions, and there's really spooky about this thing coming out of a closet and it come after him, and his descriptions of it is very much something like an alien gray. And at the time, I remember when I read that, my impression was that, you know, maybe he just didn't know what he was doing. But there have been, you know, there have been different scientific studies. You know, some of the ones more recently where they've created these out-of-body experiences. And you have to ask yourself, you know, do they really understand what they've stumbled onto? And this one was more recent. It wasn't 2 years ago. It was maybe 6-8 months ago. This study where they were tinkering with the brain. And these people, actually this emerged by accident. It was a neurologist. I think his name was Olaf Blanke. And he was working at the Brain Mind Institute in Switzerland. And his colleagues, and what they were actually trying to do was to identify the source of epileptic seizures in a 23-year-old woman. You remember this?
Mm-hmm.
And they started applying mild current through the surgically implanted electrodes to various different parts of her brain. And when they reached a certain part of her brain called the left TPJ, it's actually got a different name, but TPJ is all I can say. suddenly, she started reporting feeling the presence of this mystery person in the room. And she talked about it being behind her and then beside her. She described it as motionless, as speechless. But then later on, they were doing this test, and I'm not sure what the test was, but she had like these cards in her hand. And she talked about how this thing came and laid down beneath her and then tried to take these test cards away from her. And But they referred to it as a shadow person or a shadow self, and those scientists, of course, they're viewing all this phenomenon within their own disciplines as explaining maybe a basis for delusions or schizophrenia, and they might be right. I mean, in these case studies, they might be exactly right, but I can't tell you how much that report, when I read it, immediately started making me think of the Egyptian. The ancient religious teachings of the Egyptians. I wrote about this in my book, The Gods Who Walk Among Us. Their teachings about the Ka, K-A, which is something that's roughly equivalent to the soul in Christian speak, but it's something that's really more a duplicate self. It's something that follows you throughout life. It's kind of a shadow person. And then eventually it becomes the eternal you. It provides the body for you after judgment. So, you know, it's interesting, Sharon, that you bring up this whole thing about pharmakeia, because when, you know, we always, when we're talking about stargates, and of course I really get off on you're talking about the watchers and what they were doing and why they had to, and why, but I'd love to do a show with you sometime on the mystery of the watchers and why they had to mingle humans with animals, because there's an answer there that I haven't read in any literature, but I think it certainly explains why the Watchers had to do what they did in mingling animals and humans, and maybe it says something about where we are today. But for the purposes of extending, and when you read that word extending in the Septuagint, they saw the B'nai Elohim saw the daughters of men, that they were fit extensions. That's a pathway, a portal, a stargate. They were in one dimension. They wanted to enter into another dimension. They needed a methodology to do it. And the blending of humans and animals created for them the stargate through which they extended themselves into our reality. But why they had to do that, that's the extraordinary question.
Well, it sounds like an opportunity to do another show here sometime in the near future, so we can give that part of the topic a enough time to really get into it and really discuss it. We've only got about a minute or two left, Tom, and we didn't want to cut short anything you were saying because, as always, it's been fascinating. But in the final minute or two, why do the Watchers want to come back, and is it a good thing for mankind or bad?
In 1 minute, really?
Yeah, just to summarize and kind of tease ahead for the next interview.
Oh, well, man, well, look.
The answer is 42.
The biggest conspiracy in history involving portals and those who come through them is the legendary accounting of the Watchers who wanted to leave their plane of existence and come to Earth. And when I read the Genesis 6 or even other accounts of the Watchers, like Enoch, it's obvious they wanted to leave their plane of existence and enter ours, but they blended women and animals to create the portal, the extension. And I had asked myself that if I remained true to the most conservative interpretation of Christian scholarship, why would these angels have needed to do that? Why would they have needed to blend animals and humans? And that was my challenge. And that's what I'd love to talk to you about on the next time we do a show, because why they had to do that is extraordinary, but it'll also raise the hair on your back about what we're doing around the world right now.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, we will definitely do that sooner rather than later. Tom Horn is the author of the book Nephilim Stargates, The Year 2012 and the Return of the Watchers, also the excellent novel The Ahriman Gate, and a number of other books. We'll put links to all of those in the show notes at PID Radio. Also an article within the last month about the Vatican, once again making noise about our space brothers perhaps due to reveal themselves. Why would they be doing that? Read Tom's article. We'll link to that in the show notes as well. Tom, thank you again for your time. We know that you're really busy doing lots of interviews and lots of talking to people in the media and also getting ready for the Booksellers Convention coming up in...
He's a busy guy.
Yep. And we look forward to talking with you again about this very, very soon.
Well, you guys are so wonderful. Thank you for having me on your show and also for being so patient with blabbermouths like me.
Oh, good heavens. We love hearing you talk, Tom.
Amen.
You could talk for hours as far as we're concerned. But sadly, each show is only an hour long.
Okay.
We'll put links to everything we discussed tonight in the show notes at PIDradio.com. And, of course, if you want to discuss it with a really interesting group of people who found themselves through the Internet, we encourage you to follow the link in the show notes at PID Radio to the Piercing the Darkness Forum. And, again, we'll put that link in the show notes at PIDradio.com.
Amen to that. Well, in the meantime, if you want to reach us, you can send us an email at radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
Until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everyone.
news and analysis on demand.
This is PID Radio.